name, Amy.
My name is Misty, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from 29 of the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, and I must have this name. In the almost 2 years that I've been coming to the Monday night Blue Chip Speaker meeting, tonight is a very special night for me. I get to check off another goal in my recovery journal. With that being said, how do you even introduce a man that needs no introduction? Ladies and gentlemen, it is my absolute honor and privilege to give to you Mr. Rusty J.
Thank you. I'm Rusty Jones. I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And my sobriety date is February the 18th, 1982. That's from 41 years and a few months ago. It's been an interesting journey. I'm going to start out by telling you how I started out in these rooms. When I was first asked to be a speaker, I was told I'm not up here to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. Not why I'm here. I'm here to tell you what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like now. I'm going to have to change. It wasn't that broke. It wasn't broke at all. So that's a critical point that I owe to my predecessors, whatever you want to call them. I drank for 14 years without any real problems. Had an irate wife on an occasional basis, and you know, no big deal. It's her problem, not mine. You learn that much when you're married for a while. You learn, you know, she's going to be upset from time to time, and she got upset from time to time. But it wasn't anything to get my attention. My last 3 years out there were a living hell. I don't want to spend a lot of time on my drunk log. I do want to qualify. I was a blackout drinker from the get-go. I was told that was a sign of the progression of this disease was a blackout, and I don't believe that. Not for me. I was a blackout drinker from at the age of 19. My first drunk was a blackout. My last drunk was a blackout. I was a blackout drinker. I've been told since then by the doctors and some people in these rooms who understand this disease a lot better than I do, that's a true sign of alcoholic when you blackout. Normal drinkers are going to pass out. They're not going to blackout. I'm clearly in the right place. I sobered up at Biscayne Room. And this was back in the day when if you didn't have any money or insurance, and I didn't when I came here. Do today, thank God. But no money, no insurance. I was a veteran, so I could go to the VA or the AA. I chose the AA because I knew the VA was going to lock me up big time. I knew what they were going to do. I knew they were going to throw some pills at it. I'd had enough of psychiatry and all of that. Everything that went with it wasn't my cup of tea. Didn't like what they prescribed. I drank my way off of most of what they tried to put me on. I had another diagnosis when I came here. I was certified paranoid schizophrenic prognosis poor. And at the time I came here, I was barred from the Buckhead Mental Health Center for conduct unbecoming of the mentally ill. That's what you guys had to work with. I don't say that to be funny. It wasn't anything funny about it at the time. It was a horrible way of life. It was an unlivable way of life. I went as far as I could go with the drinking, the drugging, what happened was I crossed over on another kid, I crossed over on Ativan. Now, I don't want to talk about that a lot, but that's what happened. Was I called Fulton County Emergency Mental Health, and they referred me to another fellowship who I spent 2 or 3 days with them, and they referred me to AA. So I came into these rooms a truly broken man. I had some interesting careers, real careers, not just a job, a career. There's a difference there. It's a big difference. My first real drunk was as a freshman in college. I went to a fraternity party. I got a bottle of scotch. I think it was Usher's Green Stripe Scotch. Not the highest quality, not the lowest. And I woke up leaning against my roommate's car with about that much left from a fifth or a quarter, whatever, good sized little bottle of drunk for one man. And I was sitting there with that bottle. I remember buying the bottle, and I remember waking up and that everything else was gone, blackout. So it told me there's something wrong with that scotch, I guess. Something was wrong with my mind. I knew something was wrong when I drank that scotch. And I never forgot that. I didn't know what it was. I figured, I didn't know what to think. I didn't know it was a sign of alcoholism or anything of that nature. I went back to just drinking beer. I didn't black out on just beer. I had to hit the hard stuff before I'd black out. Well, pretty much my whole 17 years, I could drink a little beer without blacking out. But the hard stuff, I black out every time I touched it. I went to school as a pole vaulter. I'm not tall enough to be a pole vaulter. I accept that today. I was told by a track coach at the University of Georgia, Tennessee, somewhere like that, where they had the tall and better pole vaulters. Also faster than I was. I wasn't that fast. I wasn't that tall. I just, I had the mechanics of the pole vault down to, it was a science to me. I'm an INTJ, so I think scientifically. And that's what I was doing as a pole vaulter. I'm just, my best height ever was 14.7. Did 15 once in practice, but that doesn't count. 14.7 was my official best. That was as a collegiate pole vaulter. I was at Mississippi State University. I went there to prove to the coach that he was wrong about me. I was tall enough to be a pole vaulter in the SEC. I was wrong. I was very wrong. I was up against some real talent. High school pole vaulting was just, I had the mechanics down well enough to, I was a sophomore state champion. I lost the state championship my junior year and my senior year. I lost it. There's only two pole vaulters in that meet, in my mind. Me and the other guy was just, he was taller than I was, he was faster than I was. What my athletic career led me was a burning desire to be a coach. I started out as an engineering school. Mississippi State was an engineering school, so I went as an engineer. I almost flunked out. I changed to general liberal arts. Decided if I was going to get a degree in nothing, I'd get a teaching certificate to go with it. So I went with an education major, and that's how I graduated, was as an education major. Got my ID pulled once by the campus police. That's what they do. They talk to drunk. And I was worried about my scholarship. Just worried about it, but I didn't do much. I didn't do anything to change my behaviors. If they'd have known who I was drinking, who was obeying training and all the rules that went with it, I drank with people who drank the way I drank. And I did that, continued into my first real career, was in the Marine Corps. I was an officer. I was a communications officer. I was advised that I needed to think in terms of calm or tanks. Because of my height and size, I wasn't big enough to carry a 70-pound pack like a 200-pound Marine could. I just wasn't capable of doing that. I was told years ago by one of us who's a Marine that we can find the gravy, the billets. We'll get the job that we can float by on. Our literature talks about rising above the rest on our brain power alone. That was, I guess, what I thought I was going to do. It doesn't work that way. And military discipline is of no use if you're dealing with alcoholism. No use at all. I still blacked out. The drunkest I ever got that I remember was a change of command party. If you've never been to one, it's a whole different deal. In the party, the XO was grabbing all the liquor and pouring it in a vase. Big punch bowl is what it was. XO's punch. I blacked out. Threw up on another officer's carpet. In a blackout. That's what I heard I did the next day. But that was a long time ago. And I do want to get on into my recovery a little bit. Not step into a whole complete drunkalogue. But I feel like that qualifies me to be up here. Well, I will give you there are two occupational hazards for a Marine officer. There's alcoholism and divorce. I got both of them. I don't talk about it meeting much because the way I sobered up is no longer an option. The Biscayne Room is where I sobered up. I went. They still had the program where they took you in, they kept you for 3 days, and they kicked you right on back out. And I did that. It was a medication-free environment. No medications, no nothings. You come down off the alcohol. They detox me on orange juice, honey, and brewer's yeast. The B12, the sugar, and the honey. It worked pretty well. Anyway, I got through that. I somehow managed to. Well, I was holding a job as a yard man. I worked my way from Marine captain to yard man. That wasn't what IBM was looking for back in the day. But that was my track record. That was how I broke through the denial in these rooms, was looking at my track record. I said, all the old times will tell me, look at your track record. If your track record says you're an alcoholic, you belong in these rooms. If your track record doesn't say you're an alcoholic, probably going to have to work on your track record. I can only tell you how I broke through the denial. That's what worked for me, was looking at my track record. If I'm looking at my track record today, there's nothing to deny. My track record is pretty clear. I'm in the right place. I was dual disordered when I, that's what, they call it co-occurring now, instead of dual disordered. It's called co-occurring disorders now. That's what I was. The doctors don't know where to draw the line between alcoholism and schizophrenia. That was my other diagnosis, was schizophrenia. I don't like that label. It's one of the easier labels to hide behind. I don't like it for that reason. I can't say I am. I can't say I'm not. The VA still considers me that. And I just take my medication and I run from the VA. They're real good at refilling prescriptions, and that's about all I. I've had my problem with the VA over the years. I sobered up enough to work as a yard man. This was on no medication. It lasted for probably 6 weeks. I was on no medication at all. And my sponsor and I came up with a backup plan. If nothing else was working, I'd go down to Grady. So I left my mother. I was living with my mother when I sobered up. I'm not real proud of that, but at 36, I was a little old to be living at home. That was the first thing I was told when I came into these rooms. I sat down with a an old-timer at Biscayne Room. We were sitting down at one of the couches and told him my story and all the horrors of it. And he said, "Must you too old to be living with your mother?" That's all she had to say. But she was right. I was too old to be living with my mother. That was why it wasn't a workable relationship. That and my mother as well. I don't do a lot of talk about my mother in these rooms. My mother and I did not get along. I could do nothing right in her eyes under any circumstances. Took me about 10 years in these room period. That was her problem, not mine. That's a whole other story for me. Talk to me after the meetings want to, we'll talk about it. Mothers. I got in my car and I knew I wasn't gonna make it without some kind of medication. So I headed for Grady Hospital, ended up in Noonan after blacking out sober. If you're blacking out sober, you got something wrong other than just alcoholism. And that's up to the doctors to figure it out, and the only thing they could figure out on me was some form of schizophrenia. I've been diagnosed all across that spectrum off and on for years, so I'm not gonna debate diagnostic labels with anybody. It's just fruitless for me to do that. Particularly the psychiatrists. They're gonna call it what they're gonna call it. Anyway, I don't wanna get hung up on that. End up noon and they shot me full of thorazine and that was about all I had. This would have been 82. That's about all they had was Thorazine, Haldol. I didn't like either one of them. Couldn't stay on them. I was drinking my way off of them before I came here. Cold turkey and didn't work either. That's wrong chemistry to cold turkey. I'm getting way off alcoholism now, but this is my story. Sorry about that. I'm not up here as a great speaker. I'm up here to try to give the newcomers some hope. That's why I'm up here. That led me to my fiance came to get me down in Noonan. I remember stopping and my car just stopped. I thought I'd run out of gas. This is back in the day when you open the hood if you got something wrong in your car, you open the hood and somebody will stop and help you out. Don't want to do that. Try that today. It wouldn't work real well. That's an old school solution, raising the hood. This guy come up and first car came up. I didn't know where I was at and I told him, he asked me where I was trying to get to. I said, Grady Hospital. He said, well, there's a Noonan Hospital right up there, right in front of you. There's lights up there. So he asked me if he could take me there. He said, yes, please. I get in, he pulls up a fifth of vodka. Probably one of us. Anyway, so I declined on the vodka. He got me there. He got me down to the hospital. My fiance at the time, very interesting young lady. We stayed in touch for a number of years after I sobered up. She went to one island on meeting. Somebody said something she didn't like. That was it. Not here to tell her story. Very interesting young lady, though. We're really grateful I met her. I ended up driving a taxi getting sober. You know, some of the old timers will remember a guy named Jocko. Jocko was on the Sandy Springs taxi, which no longer exists. But Jocko owned it and hired me to drive. So I drove nights. And you get up there 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and nobody out there but the drunks and the cops, the taxi drivers, and that's about it. I remember sitting on a taxi stand. I was really upset with the way my life was going and I wasn't keeping up with my peers, my crib mates, whatever you want to call the people I was getting sober with. I kept falling back because I wanted to get my stuff back. I was still financially focused, and my finances wasn't where I thought they should be because I was comparing myself with other people, which that doesn't work. Up on the taxi stand, a guy named Shaky Sam pulled up, and I said to Sam, I talked to him for maybe 10 minutes. He said, Rusty, I'm at peace with my priorities. I'm sorry you're not. Not too concerned about anybody else's. But Sam had the serenity he had because he was at peace with his own personal priorities. It was that simple. He was at peace with his own personal priorities. Today, I'm at peace with my own personal priorities. Not too worried about your priorities. You're going to do what you're going to do anyway. Whether I like it or not. So I don't concern myself with other people's priorities behind what I learned from Sister Sam on that taxi stand. Probably 40 years ago now. But that was a hell of a lesson for me. But being at peace with my own priorities today is one of the most critical things that I'm doing. That's why I've got the sanity, serenity, and sobriety that I do, because that's just what works for me. Sam was a great teacher. Taught me a lot more than that, but that was the biggie. My sponsor that I started off with relapsed where I had about 4 years. And that was troublesome for me. So I asked a female to be my sponsor. And she accepted the job. I went to her and I said, and this was back when women sponsored men, men sponsored women. At least we're doing it at Biscayne. I don't know what they're doing. What was going on elsewhere much. I went to her and she said, what step are you on? I said, the 11th. She said, wrong, the 1st. That was what she said. That was it. And I accepted that. And then later in that relationship, I was ready to go see my children. She told me, don't go, you're not ready. It wasn't what I wanted to hear. I was ready. I thought about it and I said, well, started our home group, which was the old night house at Biscayne, which was a powerful meeting. A little on the hardcore side by today's standards. It was a great home group for me, perfect for the old Marine in me, just really clicked with it. She's the one that led me through the process. The book was, the gentleman who led me, taught me the book, was really a big book thumper. And he knew the book, and everybody knew that he knew the book. He taught me the book. My female sponsor led me through the process. That worked real well. Having that balance. And today, balance is so critical to me behind that. I'm looking for balance today. That's one of the most critical things this room has to offer, is balance. I remember being taught about balance. The only time I see the middle of the road is when I'm changing ditches. That was my concept of balance for a number of years. I change ditches and the ditches seem to come together. The ditches do come together in these rooms, long term. That's how I get the balance I've got today, is just letting the ditches come together. The spiritual path is like a funnel. You come into, I came into the big end, bouncing off the walls. And I found a balance point there somewhere. If I bounce off enough walls, you're going to find balance in the end. That was an interesting journey. That pursuit of whatever I was pursuing other than balance and finding peace with my own priorities. And that's what worked for me until I got barred from Biscayne. And that's a whole other story. When I was barred from Biscayne, my home group, every one of my home group signed a petition protesting to the Biscayne board. It was run by one lady more than anybody else. The group was told that their lease, we leased rooms my meeting space 11 o'clock Saturday night from the Biscayne room, that lease would not be honored anymore, that we'd, so the whole group was thrown out of Biscayne behind their support of me, which wasn't the way I planned it, but my plans don't always work out the way they're supposed to. But it was a nightmare, it was a crisis at the time. But, you know, that sober bottoms is what, I wouldn't be sober today without the sober bottoms I've hit. I wouldn't be where I'm at spiritually without the sober bottoms I've hit. If you don't drink and go to meetings, which is, I remember being taught the two rules for drunks. Don't drink and go to meetings, take your cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth. Some of you remember that. That's old school AA. Two rules for dummies. The newcomers did not share when we were. We were basically taught keep washing ashtrays till you're well enough to make coffee. We all smoked in it. That was a whole different AA. The old timers that I got sober under weren't concerned about cigarettes at all. They were concerned about getting the knives and guns out of AA. And they did a pretty good job of that. I don't remember too many knives and guns, just a few. Most people knew who was carrying the guns. Guns aren't allowed in these rooms. I'm not one of the experts on spotting them. That was a whole another version of Alcoholics Anonymous. Getting the cigarettes out of these rooms was an ordeal to go through. If you know, no words are necessary. If you don't know, no words are adequate. That's one of my favorite definitions of the truly spiritual. If you know, no words are necessary. If you don't, no words are adequate. That pretty much defines the spiritual realm right there. At some point, I had my first sponsee. This was back when the Biscayne room had a gravel parking lot before they paved it. And I remember him sitting there, and he was, this was back when you could open somebody's hood, pull a spark coil wire out, and just pull that one wire out and disable the whole car. And that was what we did, keep him from driving off drunk. And then in time I remember him leaving the Biscayne room, not quite sobered up yet, going back to Tennessee to get married. That was the last time I saw the man. It was an interesting experience for me. That was my first sponsor. Today I'm sponsoring some guys who are serious about this program. I sponsored a couple of them for some time now. Suffer with one of them en route here. It's where my focus of service work is on carrying this message to whoever wants what I've got. One of the things I learned from my big book thumping sponsor was, if you want what I got, come get it. It's that simple. That it's just a simple, simple, simple message. If you want what I got, come get it. Right. Board over there, and then you're rolling B. Roland was my grand sponsor, a gentleman who taught me the book, learned it from Roland. Hal was the guy that sponsored me. And he said, when he went to Roland, Roland said, you want what I got, come get it, but I got to tell you up front, there's a bear trap between us. Well, nobody wants to go over that route. But what he meant by the bear trap was a wall of fear. There's a wall of fear between the newcomer and the old-timer. The sponsor's job is to lead you through that wall of fear. Is that simple? Is that complicated? That's the nature of sponsorship as I understand it today. Getting through that wall of fear. I've got a wonderful life today that I'm at peace with based on my own personal priorities. And I was taught not to compare myself with other people. Just compare me the day I got here and me today. If I do that, I'm better off in every area of my life. Every area. Financially, however you want to cut it. I came here with nothing. I came here to pat on some used clothes. One of the used clothes, a Marine officer's parade dress sword, which kind of kept my head messed up for years behind that. I don't normally get into this in meetings, but I was also a police officer for 6 months. I didn't do that politics any better than I did the Marine Corps. My downfall has been in the political arena, which is why I'm so grateful for the lack of politics that we have in this room right here. We don't do politics. We don't talk about it. It's divisive. As a group, we're united by principle, divided by theology and politics and religion, and the list goes on and on of what we're divided by. That's where I'm at today. I found this guy called God, who is a verb, not a noun. That's all I tell you about my God. That scholarship is not mine. That scholarship is based on a book written by a Kabbalist. If you want to know his name, I'll tell you after the meeting. I appreciate Lisa asking me to do this. I appreciate all of you for coming here tonight and listening to my ramble. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Rusty. Thank you, Lisa, for giving me the opportunity. If you guys haven't had a chance to shake that man's hand, make it a point.
I'm gone. Away, I ain't never going back. Only thing I own in a paper sack. I'm all alone, and I'm lost from day and night. I need someone's hand. Carry me when I'm tired. I got to go. I can't stay here no more. That mean old bartender just showed me the door. Somewhere, somehow, I'll win my fight someday, and we'll all be together on that broad highway. On that broad highway.